You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
How's the sound? It's okay. What are your questions, or what would you like to share?
You said we should be grounded, but also air. Mm-hmm. Isn't air not being grounded? I mean, air is the contrary. Mm-hmm. So you're saying to be in reality that's grounded, and on the other hand, to be not here. How does it work?
Okay. So Ruth is saying that I said something contradictory.
That's how I understood it.
And it's true. And the contradiction that she heard was that I talked about being grounded and also being air. And then she's understanding that to suggest to be in reality and also not be here. Yeah. And I nodded. I said yes. So another way to put it, a little bit more simply, is to notice that we are. So I'm not necessarily trying to be grounded and air, but I'm noticing that I am heavy and light, that I am root and stem, that I am here in reality and also ungraspable. Ungraspable?
Yeah. No, I understand the word.
I know, but maybe not everyone does. Sorry. Could you hear that? Yeah? Thank you. Okay. Yeah. And it's exactly like, I love your question because it's exactly. So Ruth wants to know how to do that. How to do that. How to be grounded in air. How to be here and not here.
What I'm personally, I feel that I have this very, very, very enormous problem. Enormous. And it's weighing, and it's down here in my stomach. Mm-hmm. And then I have a feeling that you're saying, well, you can wash it away somehow. Mm-hmm. But right. It will still be there at the end of the week. Mm-hmm. And I can't get rid of it. Mm-hmm. That's
okay. So she has an enormous problem, and she feels it as a weight in her stomach. And she feels like I'm suggesting that there's a way to wash that away.
I know there isn't.
And yet that she also knows that the problem will be there at the end of the week. And it's likely to be there, that we can't be sure. So many things could happen that would be the end of the problem. But it's most likely going to be there.
We ignore it.
Wait, let me say. So she's saying, she also said, so I know it can't just be washed away. So are you saying we should just ignore it? And this is how we try to guess about the mystery. Life is really, this is what I was trying to say yesterday also, it's actually a mystery. So when we're like ants who are amazing creatures. I mean, they can carry, you would have all seen them carrying something bigger than themselves a long way and then bumping into something and turning around, and they go and they cooperate. It's amazing. But it's just crawling along the ant, and even its anthill, it can never really get a whole sense of its own home. And we're the same. In the way that we think that we can't get a sense of our own home. And so there are many, many layers of an answer to your question. And one is that the hardest one to take is that there's a part of you that doesn't care about your problem. It's not affected by your problem. It's not involved in your personal story. And it's not in pain about it. It might be in pain about the fact that someone is acting in a small-hearted way. You can see that there's pain involved. You can see the effects. But actually, there's a part of you that doesn't care, that is not willing to give up living and replace it with a problem. And so then what? Because you still have to deal with the situations. But it's a different dealing that comes when I have some sense of the quiet place that can't be touched by anyone or anything, no matter how awful.
That's the air part.
In the way you're hearing that. Yeah. And that gives everything to the earth ground part. It gives a really different kind of thinking when we have a chance to dip into silence. And we can hear that idea that things rearrange, like all of that, oh, I thought I had to do this, or not, and then only this. Or I can get that person to do that, or whatever it is. Like, they work together that way. Yeah. And sometimes a situation is big and ongoing, like yours, and it's just it's not just, but it can happen that you come to rest with it, that it isn't a problem for you anymore, though you have to deal with things. That's hard to hear, because then it's like, yeah, but I'm not there right now. It really, really hurts me and really weighs on me. So we can also go through ground because they're not really, it sounds contradictory when we try to think about it, but they're not actually two separate things. So you feel the weight in your belly and you bring kindness there, but not assuming that you are required to feel that as a weight in your belly. But you can feel the weight in your belly just now, knowing you don't know what it is or how to deal with it or where it needs to go or and feeling the weight in the belly, or for anyone, whatever you feel in your body or your mind in response to your difficult situations, because we all have them. It's always been, as far as we know. the weight in the belly is an alive experience that's difficult. But when I take away, often I feel this heaviness in my stomach and I'm trapped in a sense of the wrongness of it all. The wrongness of my feeling this, the wrongness of them for making me feel this, the wrongness of me for not being able to not feel this, are the usual three things. But it could be also the wrongness of the world and life and God for making it be like this. I'm not saying you should, but I'm just, you know. When I'm approaching an alive situation like weight in my stomach with an attitude that this is wrong, something happens, which is more entanglement, more confusion, more speed, less ground and less air. Would anyone mind, Anandiji, not you, but someone thinks they can't come in, they're sitting right outside the door. And if they want to come in, thank you. So then when I realize that most of my problem is this feeling of wrongness, and it's not to say that someone's not doing something wrong in your situation, but you approaching everything from the feeling of wrongness, it doesn't help you. Approaching your own sensation in your own body with a feeling of wrongness, whereas approaching it as something alive that's communicating, it's a place of contact. And to just feel the sensations, anyone now, you all have situations and you have symptoms in your body or your mind about that. And if you just feel it, not as a sign that you're not quite right.
No, I don't feel that.
Or that any just that this feels like this, it feels, what does heaviness feel like? And what else? Is it hard? How big is it? Is it moving? And so it's lovely, as you get into the ground of your sensations, you discover the air of your sensations too, as not two things. It has to go together. That very definite and rich feeling of heaviness, if it weren't alive and didn't move, you couldn't feel it. If it weren't here and gone, it's not a direct experience. So in the direct experience, it's this meeting point of air and ground. And it's a meeting point of human being and life. And there's a lot of potential in the meeting point. Does that make sense? I should find another way of asking the question. Does anyone have questions to clarify what we're saying?
It's the unforeseen that you're talking about.
Yes. She said it's the unforeseen that I'm talking about, or we're talking about. And especially in a really difficult situation where you are on the helpless side. Okay, but that doesn't need to click into a victim story. But you're on the helpless side. You know your best hope is the unforeseen, because you tried everything that you could foresee. You are doing it, you did it, etc. The unforeseen is. What the situation is calling for, I think. What the situation, not only this situation, and the situation being human, actually. And it's so hard in a scary, difficult situation that's so demanding, it's hard to trust the unforeseen. It's easy to go with the alarm system. But it's also then this daily practice of noticing the alarm system is taking you out of contact with ground and with air. But that it's easy because ground or air takes you to ground and air, which is where the unforeseen lands.
Unforeseen
in Hebrew? There's the art of the unforeseen. And there's a Japanese ceramic art called raku that is about inviting the unforeseen. And it's you put a lot of energy into your piece. You with the right clay and you shape your pot, your cup. But if it would all just go according to plan, it wouldn't really be raku. So you're being careful with your materials, with your ground. But you're partly preparing. So you form the pot. You prepare, even to form the pot, you prepare with meditation. So that your skill and the unforeseen make the pot.
Yes.
Not only the skill. And then you dry it, etc. And then you glaze it, so you paint it with that special paint. But also, it's not just like, it can't be done so carefully, then it's not good art. But you can prepare by dipping into silence and then brush. And you fill the inside of the pot with white glaze. So you put white glaze in and you roll it around into the pot. And that also, you don't want to be too careful. But every little thing makes a difference. Do you want to dip so that the lip of the cup is smooth on your lips? Or do you want it to be just the clay that might be a rough clay or it might be a smooth? It all makes a difference. The ground is important. But there's the richness of having glaze on your lips when you drink your tea, and there's the richness of having clay on your lips when you drink your tea, or having some of each. And I hadn't really thought about how much like life and meditation, because then you put it in this really, really hot oven, especially hot oven. I think it's 800 degrees. Does anyone know? Someone was nodding, like, is that right? More. How much is it? 900? 950. Okay. I was doing my best not to exaggerate it. So 950 degrees. The clay is glowing. If you open the door, the clay glows with the heat. This is also what we're doing. It's not always so comfortable. And then you take it out of the oven, and you can put it in a nest of sawdust or dry leaves, something that burns really easily, and you get smoke goes into all the crack. Wait. First you put it in the water. Right? Do you? No. So you dip it into the water to cool it off really fast. And it crackle, 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 and you stick it into the smoke. And the smoke gets into the cracks. That's how it is. It's what we're doing. It's so hot. It might break. You're kind of asking, are you going to break?
And it does.
It doesn't usually break. I mean, I haven't had any break, but I haven't done that many. I think if you do a lot, you're going to have some breaks. It's another part of meditation and life. Some of them are going to break. And you did your best. You rolled out the air, and it broke.
Sometimes you catch a break.
And there's something in raku. So then The pots are that hot and you have to take them out of the oven, you obviously don't stick your hand in there. They have these, the metal tongs, the metal hand, to take the pot and stick it in the bucket of water. And sometimes the tongs disturb the glaze. They change the painting. And whereas we would be like, ah, I ruined my painting that I prepared so well with so much silence, and I did that great painting, and now the tongs. But it's somehow considered a kind of mark of something that's really hard to put into words. And what I would say that meditation or even life is an invitation to be marked. For it not to go how you thought. And to let that be an invitation into human being, into life. That it didn't go how you thought. It didn't even go like your best meditation right there on the teacup. You can't wait to drink tea out of this. It's got such a nice energy, such a good spirit. And then when life marks you, it's just like a moment of power that's beyond what we can know in the way we think about knowing. But we can feel that we are marked. And we can feel, if we can feel that, in the moments that you can feel that you're marked by life. Like last year, I broke my ankle. I never would have thought when I was in Israel in May that the next time I would come, I would be sitting with my leg like this. I didn't break my ankle today. I broke it last summer. I saw some people looking so concerned. No. It was many hardships, but mostly blessings, just by the way. So many. The ways, when we feel the ways that you are marked by life, that would be easy to take as an insult or something that makes you like less quality goods. But when we feel marked, we feel that being marked. There's a chance to be in touch with life more fully. You can just say it so simply. We can feel how even the best plans are a bit of a layer, a barrier between me and life. Anyone want to ask something or say something?
In this subject, or can I?
Anything.
So I just wanted to share something that I felt this in the meditation this morning, which I thought was, for me, like a very big surprise. Maybe it's trivial for others. But you said something about, I don't remember what exactly word you said, but something directing us to the exhale or letting out there. And since then, I'm really like stunned from this huge difference of emotional mood and this is like state actually.
Yeah.
When you inhale or when you exhale, it's just a huge thing.
Mm.
And it's like something has to do with exhaling is like much more the mood of when you let yourself lose something and you feel the pain, that kind of sweetness.
Mm.
And something about inhaling is just something like wanting, like, in the bad type, it's more like anxiety, but the good type, it's more like love or something, like opening. And it's just so amazing that this is changing every second. It's really, so that's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really feel lucky because I meditate so many years and I never felt it that way.
Yeah.
And it's just happening all the time.
Mm.
I think it's a deep transition of states that's actually.
That's actually
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, in the last meditation, I was looking at the moments between.
Yeah.
Which are like where two different things touch each other, which is like really overwhelming. So much going on there.
Yeah.
So that's
great. Could you hear? No. She's saying that she started noticing the vivid qualities with out-breath and with in-breath, and how different that is in her experience today. With out-breath, she was feeling like the sweet loss of letting go. And with the in-breath, she was feeling, she said, when it's in the, I think you said negative?
Good or bad, but in the bad side.
In the bad side, she feels anxiety. And when it's more kind of freed up, it feels like love. And then she naturally also started to be interested in the space between out-breath and in-breath, the meeting place. And that she's amazed by the contrast and how much with each breath is going on after meditating so many years to kind of, for this to open out for her. You were saying at the beginning, since the meditation this morning, that the state had changed. How would you describe the state that's wowed by these changing?
I meant that the different, the inhale and the exhale are different states.
I know, but now I'm asking, maybe you weren't saying it, but what is that space that's wow?
Kind of, it's not a good, I mean, it can shoot, but you cannot, it's like being moved, of like, it's taking me to two places. It's something, I feel like it's something really, really deep about nature. So it feels like it's very personal in a way, and very like inside, and also it feels like it's, I don't know, I have a lot of philosophical thoughts, which are... And
what's the more subtle physical experience of the other?
The subtle physical, it's like...
Of the... when you're going like this. With your hand, you were going like this.
When I said the subtle experience?
No, you said... you described the deep sense of personal experience and nature, and you were like this, and then you went like this.
So this is like the more philosophical.
But if you don't go philosophical.
But is this if I don't go philosophical?
Yeah.
It's just the feeling of, I don't know, but it's like kind of more like feeling of truth or something that kind of is connecting between the inside and the outside, maybe. That's it's hard with words, but it's like feeling of truthfulness or deep understanding of something that is...
How does truth and understanding feel? She's doing like this vertical gesture and tall. If you feel also the back of your body, and then like, what, if anything comes to mind.
I don't know if I'm, you know, but it's like, there is a strong sense of this,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a strong sense of expansion,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And, it has to do with energy,
mm-hmm.
in a way, but kind of energy like supporting,
mm.
from, so it's like, it feels like very,
multidimensional
in a way, like it's really, but the axes are kind of clear, I guess, but I'm just trying to figure it out, I'm not sure how.
Can you feel that?
Another thing, maybe, I don't know how to say English, also in Hebrew, ההפך מדחוס.
It's in the opposite of dense.
It's like, but it's not like that, it's just as if there is something...
A bit expansive?
A bit expensive, but inside these
contained.
Kind of, I guess something like that.
Okay, so let's see. Let's see. What did I repeat and not repeat?
What?
Did you hear what she said about when she went like this with her hand? The first part? I said that. So, like, she felt that in a way it's personal, it feels something deep about nature, that there would be such a rich and deep experience with each out-breath that has such a contrast within the in-breath. That feels important to her in terms of just, like, reality and what is, and she feels it readily and personally, kind of. Like a personal, like, wow, is that about nature, kind of?
I guess, yeah, it's hard to... It's... Yeah, like it's the connecting the personal and the nature.
Yeah. So it feels... She used the word deep, and she was gesturing like this, and she said, I guess it's the connection between the person and nature. And then... I didn't let her go philosophical too much, although she did. Truth. She said, and so it's deep, so very similar to the ground and air, the root and stem kind of theme. So she was like this. And then she said, there's a sense of a clear axis, vertical, horizontal, supportive space in the front. And something that feels the opposite of dense, but without contradicting the sense of containment. So we can use this example, I think, as... Yesterday I talked about technique and art. And when we start, or when we're in a moment of kind of, maybe you've been meditating for 20 years, but you're sort of with new material. You're again clueless. You don't know how to do, what to do, with what. What's a thought? What's a but? Like, what? And that happens, and that's good. It's not a bad thing. So don't worry if that's happening. Then, what we can do is hear, maybe that's a technique I could try, maybe that tool, or we remember that paintbrush or whatever. And a lot of what we're doing when we try a technique is to kind of create conditions where natural discovering can happen. And it's cool, we can hear in this example that she's been practicing for many years. She's been with her breath for many years. Today, this came about. And tomorrow, something else might come. It's not only one time that something fruitful comes out of the ground. So there's a lot of times where it seems like nothing's happening or you're going backwards, etc. And the model that we could think of is more like nature, that it's not necessarily backwards, but it might be winter. And sometimes you plant something and it never stops coming back. So, did you understand what I was saying about being marked? It's partly where life happened the way you didn't want it to happen, but it can also, it doesn't have to be a negative thing. But it's knowing that I didn't do it. And it kind of interrupts my story also. I was going along being miserable, and why am I happy today? Who's, what? Something wakes us up out of our imagined reality. At least a little, sometimes completely, or a lot. And it's the beginning of stopping to trust the story about me as being interesting. We stop being so interested gradually. And then the practice, meanwhile, keeps on creating conditions that can allow a natural happening. So I can give the example of my ankle. One of the exercises that I do to help it recover is just to make conditions so that it wobbles. What's wobbles in Hebrew? Someone say it really loud.
Rotet.
So I myself can't access those muscles that I need to strengthen, or that my ankle needs to strengthen. I can't do it by whatever, I might circle it or whatever I do. I can't reach those muscles. I can't make them. On purpose, but I can stand on one foot now. I couldn't at first, but I can stand on one foot, bend my leg, close my eyes, have something to hold on to, because otherwise I will fall over. And the wobbling is the exercise. The almost falling over is the exercise. It's the natural happening of something that's strengthening itself, because it needs strengthening. And that is so much what it's like. When you feel like you're falling apart, or you can't keep it together, or you're about to fall over, or you just did fall over. And then you think that you lost track of meditation or you did something wrong. That second thought is what doesn't belong, what doesn't have the ring of truth, doesn't have that of being in touch with reality. But then often what happens is it hurts so much to think that untrue thought, that I get caught up in the speed. So I think I shouldn't be wobbling. I don't yet appreciate wobbling. I don't appreciate the power of almost falling over again and again. And of putting myself in a situation so that I will almost fall over. Having something to hold on to so I don't. That's exactly a metaphor for meditation. What is the support that can be there? So if you need it, you can not fall all the way over. but that gives you enough room to almost fall over. And where is my joy in that? Almost falling over as a way of life. I think this we could say would be something that could be replacement for battling. We had the word battle come up this morning. And sometimes, just like with medicine sometimes tastes bad, sometimes tastes good. Wobbling sometimes is fun and sometimes it's not fun. Sometimes it's a sweet sadness of letting go, and sometimes it's a being filled with what may be called love. We might even find that exhale, inhale are two kinds of love. Letting go and also receiving it. Being filled. So there's the second part of the poem from yesterday. Number two. There's only two, there's not three. Don't worry. Praise. Don't think of it. If we can take that in, it's most important inside in the meditation, where we might practice meditation looking for even my own praise and trying to get away from my own criticism. And we can go a long time like that until we just can't go anymore. And we wonder, where's the joy of meditation? And why don't I feel like meditating anymore? Why would anyone want to keep meditating if that would be meditation? Vanity is absence. Be here. Here is the root and stem, unappraisable, on whose life your life depends. This might be suggesting something similar to what you were saying about the connection between the person and what's beyond the person but nature. And where, when we're in touch there, where that's not a separate thing anymore. And that's the beauty of it, I think. I think it's partly realizing my life depends on something beyond my life. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe it's wonderful. Maybe it's wonderful scary. But better than another option. And then we find that my life depending on that life, which we access and honor by being here and letting it have a root and a stem, which seems contradictory, but it does. We're here and not here. Definite and rich and ungraspable. The depending on, letting my little life depend on that big life, letting that depending happen. So good. The moments where you realize you don't need to be thinking that, and you do feel your back on the ground. Even if, again, the next second something jumps to attention. Depending in this way, natural depending, little life, big life, is an ending of that sense of separation. It's an ending of absence in the language of the poem. Number two, be here. And Ruth was asking, yeah, but how? So he's telling us, be here like the water of the hill that fills each opening it comes to leave with a sound that is a part of local speech. Be here like the water of the hill that fills each opening it comes to leave with a sound that is a part of local speech. This is being marked. This is being dependent in a way that's true. Letting go of the misunderstanding that I'm supposed to be original in some kind of self-contained, self-sustained, got it always all together way that's final. Now I'm done. And it isn't like that. Be here like the water of the hill. We're trusting our own potential. The water has potential energy at the top of the hill, and it just is going to go down if we get out of the way. That is what's going to happen. And if it comes to a hole or a rock, it's going to fill that up and keep going. That's us. Be here like the water of the hill that fills each opening. So it's no longer an absence or a hole or a lack. It's just an opening. The feeling of heaviness in my stomach is an opening. Whatever is alive that we can feel is an opening. What makes it an opening or not is mostly to do with whether I approach with a feeling of wrongness. It might be my deep-held belief that something is wrong with me. So it's so easy to think, oh, and now that thing that I believe is wrong with me is what's wrong with me. Now I'm really wrong. But then the whole conversation, just like put it with the water going down the hill, time and again and again and again. But mostly tune into something else. The water not only has the quality of moving, also filling, and also leaving. To leave with a sound that is a part of local speech. If it is a cost, the cost of being human and content or happy is that you leave with the sound of the place, of the contact, of that person that you meet, or that moment that you met. It becomes part of your sound. When we allow ourselves to be in contact, we're marked in that moment. If that's a cost, that's the cost. It might at first and beforehand as an idea sound like a cost. I'm going to be marked. I'm going to be changed if I meet you. Even if we don't say anything, but if I let that meeting point be present, even though something in me immediately turns away, something if it stays. Is that sweetness of letting go that can be painful. As I know myself, I'm not anymore. I'm now partly you. The word that I like for today is intact. And I want to play with the word, but intact means that it's all whole. It's not broken apart. And our mind can't understand it. So like Ruth's question at the beginning, but you were contradictory. Yes, I'm sorry, I am. Describing reality is contradictory. And it's insulting to our wish to understand the way we want to understand, and we can't understand. So intact is not saying, oh, I'm not broken. I've never been marked. Nothing bad. I've never lost anything. That would mean you'd never had an out-breath. It's not to pretend or ignore, but it's to say that loss is not all. It is, and it's all that it is, and it's not all there is. And no matter what that breaking, that break, that loss, whatever it was or is, it can't touch the ground air reality of us, where our joy lives. And what I like, also, what I especially like about the word intact is if we tact, is like tactile, it means like touching. Touching in, or being in touch. So actually such a lovely phrase. Being in touch. It's another way of saying being here, but being in touch. Being in the mode that acknowledges that touch is powerful. We can thank our cooks for cooking. Mm-hmm. And culturally, our tendency is away from being in touch. But our body and mind still respond to touch. And if it might be that we need to bring interest to touch and the response to touch. And I don't mean someone touching you when I say touch. Touch, you're in touch always. There's air and ground. But I also mean being in touch in that way of meeting. So it can be meeting your stream of life. The stream keeps moving, but the staying in touch is what stays still. Staying in touch with the moving. The movement of your life, the movement of your mind, the movement of your spirit. There's a definite sense of staying and stillness that isn't stopping the movement. It's staying, what it is staying in touch, staying in contact, staying intact. And what it is also in the honest meeting, we do experience the not to experience. And that's part of, like, so we meet and we know we're not to. That's what I mean. And it's freaky. Most of us is like, eh. That didn't happen. But it did. And it calls us back. Eventually. And so we do need to address also, by the way, our sort of love-hate relationship with being in contact. That we need it and we don't want to need it. We depend and we don't want to depend. So part of a, if we can say, journey of being intact or towards being intact, because we keep recovering things we didn't know we'd left out also. One part of it is realizing just so simply, this is my body. I can be at home here. Despite everything, despite the vulnerability, despite not liking this and that. This is where I can be at home. And also, sometimes that comes first, and sometimes what comes first is realizing that the body is not necessarily this container that is my home that I get inside and stay inside. It's not necessarily so simple. It is much more mysterious and wide-ranging. So you can play with that in the sense of feeling physical sensations as they are and not forcing the physical stream of experience, sensations of hot, cold, texture, heavy, light, movement, for example, density, expansiveness. Not making that match your memory or image of what you think your body is. That's just an easy way to bring it down to earth and then find that at earth is not so, it's not only earthy. It's not so solid. But it is that simple. So being intact, feeling more wholeness as a practice, I often suggest that you might have 10 or 20% of your practice that's dealing with the difficult and working on the difficult and that kind of thing. And that means 80 or 90% is left. That could be the joy of doing nothing. It could be the joy of discovering the out-breath. Something that might be a bit hard to feel, you haven't practiced much, feeling at home, feeling belonging, feeling love, feeling free. You can go via memory, you can go via present experience. All of those things could be found just now. There could be a sense of love in just breathing. There could be a sense of the freedom of just breathing. And starting to shed, so to let fall away, to take away what we impose on our practice. We think, oh, I've got to be simple, so it's just my body. And then it's my idea of my body that I'm loyal to. My experience is all over the place. My idea is just only this. So if we can be not contained by the idea, but by our willingness to be in contact and to notice that we are always in contact. Maybe you might have noticed being in touch with anything, any small thing, a taste or a touch. That being in touch sometimes gives a whole sense of wholeness. It gives a whole sense of, even though that's not the end of my physical sensation experience, something feels complete. So another kind of completion that's not a stopping. It's unavoidable in that as we start to allow and get the hang of completion that's not an end. Completion that gives birth to the next wholeness and wholeness and wholeness. Is that it's juicy. It's sensually pleasant much of the time in a way that sometimes is even unpleasant. It's so pleasant. And other times it's just really unpleasant. And if I'm looking for pleasant or unpleasant to guide me, I'm going to be confused. If I'm looking for being intact, being in touch, to be what guides me, there's not so much need to be confused. I'm okay with not quite understanding, but I can go with something. There's something trustworthy here. So part of juiciness is just how sometimes being in contact with, for example, this morning, Ram talked about the leaf with the light in it. And sometimes that happens, and the joy, the glory, the appreciation, it could be a little or a lot, that the food, wow, tastes so good. The same food wouldn't taste so good if you'd been doing other stuff this morning. And we kind of need to actually make room for that juiciness, even in that simple way of joy and appreciation. It takes up, it needs a lot of space. Which is funny, because it's in the detail that the vastness comes, the root, the ground and air thing. And practicing making room for joy or appreciation or gratitude or just enoughness, completeness, completion that's not a stop, can also start to leave room for just joy that's not joy because. And this again can sometimes at first feel like you're seeing a ghost, like we're so used to just being programmed. I'm happy because this, I'm unhappy because that. That when something else comes through that's clearly not because this or that, something doesn't like it. It's like, what? Who are you to come into me? So practice as creating conditions that allow something that's beyond me to happen. And it can be in this simple way that there's light in the leaf and you appreciate it. You feel appreciate. And what then, what is that appreciation? Feel it. What does it feel like? I'm not showing you how you should feel it, but just there might be a spreading in the chest, or there might be a dropping into the feet, or whatever. You're allowed to get into that. And how much room it takes up. And so then that's one of the bumps that we come across, is the who me. Who me to be happy when the world is like this, for example. Who me to be happy when I also have all these problems. When I'm clearly not good enough. Who me to be happy. Who me to belong. Who me to be love and to be loved. But then we start to hear that even the question, who me, which is just the inner critic, in short, it's just not really worth our time. It's just more of that layer of personal story. And what else is more interesting to you? What's actually interesting to you? So there's the way that when there's pain, we often will easily, that's all we can feel. Or we only can feel that and then we shut it down. But our reactivity is organized around pain, usually. But something that's not about reactivity wants to kind of organize around something else that's sort of off the chart. It's not like, oh, it's not pain, so pleasure. Not ground, so air. Not air, so ground. No. Something beyond that framework. So sometimes someone's been practicing for a while. And that might be a morning, or it might be a few years. And then, meditation. I know it's good for me. That's just a signal that your practice is ready to come to fruit. When something comes to fruit, it gets bigger and sweeter. And it has seeds in it. For the completion that goes on to the next thing. So we need to actively notice how we shut juiciness out of meditation and to let that fall apart. And notice that juiciness is in meditation. That meditation is juicy. Where the juice is where your meditation is, however you want to approach it. And so often it's hard to go search for where's my juice. There might be something that you know, but there might be some important details that you aren't aware of yet that can be part of your formal practice. But to explore it needs that you leave room for eros and pleasure and juiciness in your meditation and in your life. And I'm not, it is big and intense. It's a really big shift. It's a revolution, actually. But it's nothing more than you see the light in the leaf sometimes and it wows you. You feel the difference of the out-breath and the in-breath and it wows you. You taste the plain rice and it's a world. And so something starts to kind of, through honoring life, and so we talked yesterday about getting uptight. Oh, it's so precious. And then we get uptight and then feeling how that doesn't work, but we still want to honor what's important. As someone who's honoring life, honoring what's important to you, something in you starts to be honorable. And we dare to cross the line of who me. That big, that happy, that strong, that whatever, tender, generous, whatever. And along the way to kind of letting your life be honoring and honorable, we have to kind of shake out that feeling small and also feeling big, like the arrogance and the kind of, I can say, low self-esteem, small self-image. We just shake them out along the way. So who me doesn't mean like, yes, me. But it might be for a day that you have to be like, yes, me. And then you get over it. It naturally shakes out. So we start to feel we have less and less of a job, but we start to notice that that really small job of just being in touch is great, has greatness in it, and reveals and opens out the greatness of life. And without getting hooked on my own greatness, that to find that there's room for the greatness, that amazingness of how the out-breath and the in-breath are so different. And that we can just stay at rest, in touch, and let it all move. greatly. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the wholeness of freedom in our very life and in the lives of all.